Hi, this is Sam Lagana with the Los Angeles Rams. Whose house? You're listening to the Los Angeles Rams UK podcast. Undenied worldwide. The Los Angeles Rams. It doesn't get any better than this. Let's go Rams.
Hello and welcome to the LA Rams UK podcast, episode 79. Plenty to whine about. I'm John, and joining me, as always, is Andy. Andy, I guess, how are you, mate?
Oh, disappointed and angry after last night. It was just not a good show in all rounds, and, you know, just really puts you in a bad mood for the whole day.
Did you stay up and watch it then?
Yeah, I ended up staying up and watching it because I knew that if I didn't, and I saw this morning that we'd lost, I wouldn't want to watch it because it just put me in that much of a bad mood for the day.
Oh, filthy, man. I didn't stay up for it, mostly because, to give a bit of context, when we had the NFC Championship game, I stayed up for it. Hadn't long started a new job, had about 2 hours sleep, had to work the next day. May have had to take a several hour nap break the next day. Just realised after I said that some people from my work may possibly listen to this. Oh dear. So I thought, no, can't have a repeat of that. So yeah, learn from that. So I got up in the morning, seen the score, and immediately didn't want to go to bed. I wish I could say I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised about it. What's your initial thoughts on how the game panned out?
Like you, I wasn't really surprised because they are our regular season bogey team, but it was more the manner of it. You know, we just didn't seem to get things clicking properly. You know, our defense, you know, you look at the score and you think, okay, you know, the defense, you know, did the job reasonably well and the offense just wasn't clicking, but it wasn't that. It just felt like everything was off. Players you expect to have big performances, you know, and to want to, you know, get the win just didn't seem to click all night long. You know, it's just one of them weird games again. Bit like the Buffalo game, to be honest. You know, we just never seem to get clicking and firing with a lot of players.
Yeah, I mean, normally at this point, I would start going through the drive summary, but I kind of feel like the way this game panned out is it's just too painful to go through again. And, you know, I only watched the 5-minute highlight literally before we did. We came online. And the reason being that is because of who we were playing against. For the week one game against the Bills, I didn't watch the game live, but I went back the next day and I watched the 40-minute highlights. It's the 49ers. It's our biggest rivals. And, like, just, you know, to quote Aaron Donald, I hate them with a passion. I just couldn't go back and watch the highlights, and I felt like it was like Tony, part of the team, was the one that's like kind of made me think, like, can you not at least just go and watch like the 4 or 5 minutes? Come on, man, you need to watch something. And I just didn't, at the very end, I felt like I need to see how bad this actually looks. And oh god, it is actually as bad. And I try to be as positive as I can when I look at losses, but I must admit I'm going to struggle tonight, and I feel bad for anyone listening to this because no one wants to sit and listen to like an hour or whatever of negativity. But unfortunately, this was one of those weeks that it was a very bad week for us, wasn't it?
It was. It just felt like one of them games. Nothing. You know, we seemed to move the ball well at points, but then it just seemed to constantly break down. And, you know, big players, like I say, you know, Aaron Donald, not a sack. You know, we didn't get a sack all night. You know, players that you would expect. And, you know, and I know people are coming up with excuses, which we'll come to in a bit, you know, with, you know, O-line and everything else. But when you look at it, the 49ers were in exactly the same position we were. They had, you know, probably one of the best left tackles in the league out. Yep. You know, that they had a bunch of rookies in. They had injuries during the game on the line as well, which, you know, those are the sort of games where you'd be like, yeah, you know what? Even if Aaron Donald is getting, you know, double, triple, quad teamed, you know, you want, you know, Leonard Floyd, you know, we paid him good money to get us to get in the games, to get us those sacks. And everything just seems like it almost just felt like that everybody was just going through the motions of we're here, and had almost like a mentality of that's the 49ers at Levi, we're going to lose, we'll just go through the motions, and you know, that's what it is. And that's how it felt to me at times.
Yeah, and just one of the things that we were saying just before we came on there tonight was that it just seemed to be a case of they knew exactly how we were going to play and what we were going to do. We offered nothing other than what we usually do when we go out there. And a few of the plays were just so easy for them to literally pick us off, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. But I think, again, this comes back down to, as I said last season, you know, when we got beaten by them, you know, both McVay and Shanahan, they've both come off Kyle Shanahan's dad's scheme, the West Zone, you know, play action sort of, you know, what's it now called, like the Shanahan offense, you know. So, and I think it's just a case of Kyle Shanahan knows pretty much exactly what McVay's going to do with his offense. And I hate to say it, but McVay just doesn't seem to, all right, he knows what I'm going to do. We need to adjust and make some changes. He just seems to be, like we've said time and time again, it's this is plan A, this is what we're going to do. If it doesn't work, well, just keep going and, you know, we'll just keep hitting our head off that brick wall until it does work. And I think, again, it showed last night that was exactly the case. It was like, okay, we're just going to go with it. Eventually things, and then there was never an adjustment. You know, so I think, you know, it's just a case of, I think Shanahan's, you know, out-coaching McVay every time we play against each other.
Does it then bring up the question that it was maybe the occasion and a bit of luck that got us over the line and got us to beat them in the NFC Championship game? Because that's Jimmy G now 7-0 against us in the regular season.
You do start to question, you know, we did make some adjustments for that game. I have to admit, you know, we all said at the time, you know, we seemed to do something different. We couldn't quite pinpoint, but it felt different, you know. And again, you know, you had your big players, your Aaron Donalds and everything else stepping up in that game and going, you know what, let's put it on our back and let's go. Whereas last night, like I said, it didn't seem like anybody was like, okay, we need to dig deep and get, you know, it was just like, yeah, we're here, we'll go through the motions and move on to next week sort of attitude, almost.
Yeah, and you mentioned it like a wee bit there, just to kind of elaborate on it more. We did get moving on a few drives. It just seemed a case of we couldn't convert in the red zone again. And we kind of saw this last week. Is the offense losing all kind of momentum when we get downfield now? Are we running out of ideas in the red zone to be able to punch it in? Or is it just a case, like you said, we just stick to plan B A so much that teams then defend to plan A and we don't have anything we can adjust to?
I can't quite put my fingers on it. I think some of it is that plan A thing. You know, I think we even saw it last night. You know, okay, that fade to the corner, you know, the back corner ball has worked a few times, but teams are picking up on that, but we still just keep doing it. Instead of maybe adjusting that route and saying, all right, make it look like you're going to go that way, then cut back inside on the, you know, on the corner and maybe, you know, just change it up a little bit. It just seems to be, like you say, that's worked before. We'll just keep doing that. And teams are going to pick up on that, especially, you know, well-coached teams like, you know, I hate to say it, but well-coached teams like the Niners, they're going to pick up on that and go, right, this is what they do. So if they give you this look, and that's exactly what happened last night. I don't know if it's just a little bit of, you know, obviously we know it gets tougher when you get down the red zone, but it just feels at the moment in the red zone, it's got to be Cup or no one. There doesn't seem to be that second or third person that he can look at and go, right, okay, well, I know Cup's going to get double teamed out this one. So, you know, that's where we look at, you know, Higby, Robinson, whoever maybe the third wide receiver in. We don't seem to be doing that. And obviously, we're struggling even running the ball. So it's not as if you can sort of like, you know, pound that ball in with our running back and maybe go, all right, you know, we'll just smash it. You know, we'll go three times, smash it, we'll get through eventually. So I think it's all just a combination, just all playing in at the moment. And I don't know, maybe Stafford's just that pressure of, you know, oh, he's not scored a touchdown this game. Oh, it's two games now without, you know, it seems to be there's more and more pressure getting put onto him. And, you start to think again, is this affecting them a little bit, the pressure?
Yeah, so just on Matt Stafford there, just to kind of break down his performance, like you said, it's now his second game without a touchdown. Against the 49ers, he was 32 for 48 for 254 yards, no touchdowns, an interception, which was a pick six, and a fumble, which was recovered by the 49ers. He was also pressured a hell of a lot of times and sacked seven times by the 49ers defense. I mean, it's one of those ones. See if he had a touchdown, it wouldn't have been as bad a performance from. I don't know if I'm wrong for saying that, considering I've only watched 5 minutes and you watched the whole game live. But like statistically speaking, that like you would look at that and you go, if he had one touchdown, it would be a decent game for him, even if they did get beat. But it wasn't for him. What's your opinions on Stafford specifically? That's now the second week without a touchdown, and just like we were saying there about the struggles with the red zone.
Yeah, it's starting to get a little bit of a worry, because you know, at the end of the day, this should be his bread and butter. You know, we've paid him as a franchise quarterback, you know, for these occasions when we're down in that red zone. He needs to find ways of, you know, extending the plays, getting that ball to where he's going. And, you know, last night, you know, as much as I think the stats kind of, you look at them, as you say, and you go, yeah, all right, it wasn't that bad a game, really. But when you actually watched him live, you know, they could have had a pick in the end zone because he literally threw it right out their player. Again, like yeah, pretty much like he did in the championship game, you know. A lot of the passes he was putting up last night were sailing here, there and everywhere. A lot of them, if it wasn't for the fact the receivers adjusting themselves to catch those balls, they were going everywhere. You know, he was overshooting players all over the place. He was just missing them. You know, he had one to, it was to Cup, you know, which normally, you know, Cup had Fred Warner covering him. So, you know, you kind of ideally linebacker against the wide receiver, you kind of expect. But he just put the ball into the ground, and, you know, a good foot in front of him. And you're like, everything with him just seemed off. And, you know, we've already had discussions of, you know, does he have an elbow? Is this elbow issue again? You know, it's creeping up on social media again. Is his elbow issue as okay as they're making it out to be, or is he playing through too much? And, you know, those questions when you watch the performances just start to creep in again of, is he 100%? Or, you know, is there an injury? But also to do with Stafford, I did see, I can't remember where I saw it, but it was last week. You know, we were talking about, you know, is he under too much pressure? Another side of it is maybe he doesn't have any pressure now, because he's come in, he's done his job, he's won a Super Bowl. So maybe his eyes come off that ball a little bit, and he's sort of like, yeah, I've come here, I've done what I was expected to do. I can coast for the next however many years. So, you know, there's two ways of looking at it, depending on, you know, is he under too much pressure, or is he just took his eye off, you know? And at the moment, you can't tell which one's which with him.
Yeah, like, of the first few episodes of this season, The elbow thing was the first thing we talked about in game one. And then over the last couple of weeks, it's creeping in. There is a kind of lack of precision there now to his passing game. That sidearm pass that he does so well, there was a scene, a clip of one, it was intended for Higbee. And it was so far behind Higbee that I'm surprised that a defender hadn't even picked it up. Like, it just seems to be a bit off, and maybe it's like you said, maybe it is a case of the monkey's off his back. He's won a playoff game, he's won a championship game, now he's won a Super Bowl all in the same year. He's achieved everything that he would want to achieve and probably never thought he could achieve in all those years in Detroit. So perhaps it's like the pressure is off him now. He's like, well, I've delivered. They traded for me to come here and build to win a championship. I did it all in 1 year. I'm not saying he's coasting. But it's like you, I do think you're right in that the pressure is off his shoulders and he feels that he can be a bit more relaxed. But with that, there's no room for error when you're coming off the back of a Super Bowl winning season. The Super Bowl hangover, I think we can all say, is real. That is 100% real. Teams are completely affected by it the following year. That I think there's more, it's because there's more eyes, there's more criticism, there's more pressure on them, because you're obviously at this high level, having won the big one, that everyone is now made, that's the bar, and everyone's measuring you to be moving above that. And maybe that's where we've had a lot of, no, the Rams have regressed. And we've sat here and we've said, well, we don't see exactly how we've regressed. Yeah, we're maybe not as strong here or there, but we've not regressed to the way you guys are saying. But it, maybe it is a case of, no, the bar has been raised. We are regressing because we're beneath that bar. We're not even parallel to it anymore, which at the very least we would have said we were. Do you think that the regression, we'll say, is real within this roster?
Yeah, definitely. We definitely regressed within the roster. You know, and again, I hate to harp back onto it, but with the play call and it again, we don't seem to, you know, you'd expect, yeah, okay, you know, that people have this whole year's worth of tape on us, the Super Bowl, everything, right, okay. We you know, you need to make little tweaks, changes here and there. Yeah, okay, we've been unlucky with a lot of injuries, you know, in key positions, but, you know, there doesn't seem to be that adjustment and that new spark. You know, when Stafford came in, it was a little bit of that new spark because McVay could open up that playbook to go deep. You know, obviously with Goff, we were limited in his throwing ability, whereas with Stafford, it was right, okay, we have this, you know, shiny new toy, right, okay, well, let's get out all these things from the back of the playbook that I've never been able to use and we'll stick them in. And, you know, we looked good, you know, but we've not made adjustments, I feel, sometimes from last season to this season. It's, well, that worked. Like I say, it's, again, that worked for us last year. Why ain't it working this year? But it will work eventually. That mentality of plan A, we'll just keep battering our heads on the wall until we get through. You know, so I think there has to be, you know, I think we said this coming up to, you know, our bye week last year, adjustments needed to be made.
Yeah.
And the team luckily did, you know, coaching staff, team, everybody obviously came together and made a few adjustments. And I think it's going to have to be the same again. We're going to have to come to our bye week, which luckily is a bit earlier this year, you know, look at it and go, right, this isn't working. What can we change? What can we get sorted so that we can come back out on the bye after the bye and get firing again? Because otherwise, if we don't, I'm not being horrible, the way we're playing at the moment, we'll be lucky to make the playoffs.
I kind of agree with you there on that one. That's the kind of the feeling last year when we were going into bye week, is we felt the same, that this, if we don't make adjustments here, we're not making the playoffs. Again, I feel the exact same. I felt last year, we, in the end, through November, we limped to the playoffs, and we weren't, I guess, ravaged by injuries like on the offensive line as we are. I feel like it's the same this year. We are going two more games to our bye week, and again, I feel like it's a limp to get there, to hopefully reset. Hopefully we get some more guys back, especially on that line, and I pray to God that they come out and have made the adjustments. But let's be honest, last year we came out of bye week, went to the Packers, and we all came away from the game saying, well, where are the adjustments? We don't see them. And I hope, for our sake, it's not the same, because McVay's off to his worst start since he took over as head coach. A lot of pressure is going to get put on him. It really is. And I'm not saying he deserves it or anything like that. Absolutely not. Maybe do him the world of good to have some more pressure put on him to come out of his comfort zone, to make those adjustments, to finally make a plan B, to start thinking, I can't rely on Kupp for every single pass. Right now he's got Higbee as a number two. I can't rely on Higbee as number two. I need to start opening up my playbook more, more schemes, more bootlegs, get Stafford moving a bit more, stop sitting in the pocket looking for the pass, because my line is not going to protect him. Get him out of that pocket, get him roll out, get play action going. That's really what, at this stage, I'm hoping the next few weeks, McVay hopefully trials out as part of their offensive play. But just going back, when we're talking about pressure that was put in Stafford, like I said, 7 sacks he gave up last night. He received 7 sacks. I guess, sorry, before I come on to it, this is where the sack stat seems to get put on the quarterback as opposed to where the stats should get put on, and that is the offensive line. The offensive line are the people who give up the sacks, not the quarterback. Quarterback's job is to call the plays and execute the plays. His job is not to then have to evade a sack because his offensive line has failed to protect him. Now, looking at our stats so far, we have been sacked 16 times in four games. Now, averages four a game. That doesn't sound too bad. It sounds worse when you hear it like this. The Bills, seven sacks. 49ers, seven sacks. I don't even want to call the 49ers a decent team because they're not, but they always look better and perform better against us because it's that rivalry. So two really tough games. We gave up 14 sacks. Again, the Cardinals game and the Falcons game is just a sack apiece. The offensive line can't be giving up that many sacks, can they?
Oh, God, no. You know, you cannot be giving up those sorts of sack numbers against teams because you're putting yourself in a position you can't win because you can't get the offense going. You know, but again, I think, you know, a few of us were discussing it last night. You know, we were trying to do the drop back pass game, you know, 7-step, 10 drops, 10 step backs for Stafford, expecting that line to hold for him. And it's like, they're not holding. You can't do that. We have to play that quick dink and dunk pass here. Just get the ball, 3-step drop, get it out of his hands to give that O-line, you know, a bit of help. And, you know, again, you know, I hate to keep bringing it back to coaching, but that's a coach's fault. The coaches should be saying, right, that bit, playbook gone, because we can't do it tonight. We're just going to have to make, you know.
Exactly.
Because dinking and dunking it, you know, just doing that little, you know, 5 yards here, 5 yards there, and letting, you know, players get that run after catch. That's when we were moving the ball successfully. You know, we were plodding up the field. But when we were trying to, like I say, get Stafford back into the, you know, the proper, you know, deep, they were just coming round like they didn't exist. And, you know, yeah, we had a lot of injuries. And, you know, I'm not going to knock that. But my problem is this is what's going to happen when you don't invest in your O-line. And this is something we don't do very well. We seem to, okay, we'll have our front, you know, our starting five who, yeah, we've drafted, but they're later in the round. You know, they're not round one, round two talents. Most of them are three, four, round five guys, you know, and then we'll just have a bunch of UDFAs in there. And, you know, we'll just hope that maybe one of them can stick and play half decent. And, you know, when you've got your line of, you know, Havenstein, all right, didn't play that badly. Note Boom going up against Bosa, just, you know, Bosa just laughed at him all night long. But it was more in the center, those three in the center, you know, they're all UDFAs or late round draft picks. They're going up against, you know, credit to the 49ers, but credit to you, they have a very good front four on that team, you know, and they have good depth on that as well. You know, they were just getting, I'm not being funny, beat up, and they may as well have not even been there at times because they just weren't putting anything into them.
Yeah, do you know, there was one play and Stafford gets sacked, and watching the play and bearing in mind the camera angles for the sidelines, the crowd cheered before the sack, and I realised the point where they cheered was when they realised, and I think it was Ebukam, had clear, basically a free run at Stafford. They cheered because they could see the sack before Ebukam had broken away from the line of scrimmage. Like you said, like, I credit to them, I guess, that their rushing against us was just, they were absolutely on point. But for the fact that, like, even at the centre, the crowd are even picking out, that's a sack, before it's even happened. Like, you just, no, you can't, your offensive line can't do that. And like you said, our recruitment to the offensive line has been absolutely atrocious. Now, we do have a couple of good players there. We did have an absolute brilliant Jemia player in Whitworth, but he's obviously moved on, retired. And there's people like begging him to come out of retirement. And jumping ahead, normally we obviously do the social media questions at the end. We got quite a lot of questions, as you can imagine here. And there is a theme round to them. So there is actually a group of questions and they're all related to the offensive line. So just whilst we're on the topic, I think I'll bring them all in So the first one coming from Ian Woodley, are we paying the price for neglecting the offensive line? I'd say yes.
Yep, definitely. 100%. You know, it is, you know, if you look at most successful teams, they start by building in the trenches and then they work the way back. You know, if you have a good, you know, I'm not saying an elite, but a good, solid front five in front of the quarterback, it helps to make an average quarterback look good. You know, as much as we rag on Goff, when he had a good start and O-line in front of him, he looked competent. It was only when we started to be, all right, this player's going to go because we can't afford him. All right, we're going to have to get rid of this guy this season because we can't afford him. That, you know, Goff started to struggle. And we're seeing it again with Stafford. You know, as you say, we've lost Whitworth. We lost, the guard that we lost, Corbett. We've lost Corbett, him. Yes. You know, he left, you know. So, you know, we're starting to get to that point again where we're losing. And then other players are getting older. You know, Havenstein's not getting any younger himself. He's, you know, so, you know, and what we did to Goff is exactly what we're starting to do with Stafford. The problem is Stafford is a lot older. And if he's going to get banged about like that seven times a game, you know, that's just sacks. I think there must have been about another four or five times where they weren't sacks, but he got, you know, a good hit off, you know, Niners defenders.
Yeah. Well, the fumble was almost a sack.
Yeah. But, you know, how long, given, not being funny, Stafford's history of injuries, you know, no player, you know, can live. Look what happened a couple of years ago to, you know, classic, you know, to Joe Burrow. Because of how bad his offensive line was, how many times, eventually his body just broke down, you know. Classics of Andrew Luck, players like that. And, you know, if we're not careful, we're going to do exactly the same to Stafford as what's happened to those players. And if we lose Stafford for the season, then that's it. Our season is well and truly ghost.
Yep. Dan Flint on the offensive line asks, do we now try and bring in a vet help for offensive line? Like I said, there's people begging Whitworth to come out of retirement, and he won't. But do you think we try to bring help in elsewhere? Or is this where maybe like someone like Skura has been recruited to try and help fill the gap?
Yeah, I think we do have to look around. You know, I'm not sure, you know, off the top of my head, what if any O-linemen are maybe on the trade block. The only one I can think of off the top of my head that could be available would be Andre Dillard from the Eagles. You know, he's not getting games. He didn't even come in when their left tackle got injured the other night. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know whether maybe he's got an injury. He's the only one off the top of my head I could think of. But again, he's going to cost a lot. He's a former first-round pick. You know, we don't really have the draft capital to be able to, you know, bring players like that in. So, you know, yeah, we're going to have a look around and see maybe what's available, see what's out there. You know, one idea I came up with last night is I wonder if you could maybe convince JC Tretter to come out of retirement and play for us, you know, just to maybe give us that little bit of, you know, help. But, you know, yeah, I will question the choice of, we have Skura on the practice squad in Cologne, and he brought up Cologne instead of Skura, you know, given his versatility and the fact, if nothing else, he has 4 or 5 years starting experience in the NFL. Obviously, exactly. I'm not saying he's some great, massive, you know, player. It's clearly why he's not been picked up by teams and he's on our practice squad. But you think to yourself, surely he could give us, if nothing else, that little bit more experience to maybe settle down other players around him because he has that experience. And, you know, he played for Baltimore for 4 years. He's used to heavy, big rivalries and those sorts of games. So, you know, I am questioning the call. You know, maybe there's something going on behind the scenes that we don't know. Maybe he's not up with the play scheme. He's injured. I don't know. But, you know, there is questions of he should have been the one that was brought up, to be honest, before Cologne.
Yep, I would agree, especially with Skura being, you know, an outright centre, that it's the centre of the offensive line where most of the problems seem to be kind of originating from. Just grouping another couple of questions together. Di Harris asks, how long then until we address the offensive line, look to add real support? And just on the topic, when you're saying about draft capital and whatnot, the, you know, the hindsight question, should we have drafted a centre instead of Tutu Atwell?
The problem is, it's our team, much like, you know, I think we complained for years they never took middle linebacker serious. I think it's the same thing on our offensive line. They don't seem to take it very seriously, you know, or they seem to have this mentality of, all right, you know, third, fourth, fifth round, and then a bunch of UDFAs, as I said earlier, you know, it's like if you throw enough thing at a wall, some of it will end up sticking. You know, it's one of them. You know, we'll just throw it at the wall. I'm sure one of these will come up half decent and we'll be all right. You know, and you can't do that. You know, for every one that may be half decent, there's going to be 20 that they're undrafted for a reason, you know, yeah. And it's just ridiculous. But in terms of Atwell, yeah, I think, you know, you have to start looking, you know, he's not getting game time. He's not doing anything, you know, maybe we should have. And I mean, I just did a quick thing here this afternoon because I did see about Atwell. You know, if I point out players, you know, this isn't just going to be O-line. This is other players that we could have maybe brought in after he was taken between basically him and sort of the next pick with Ernest Jones. You know, you look at it from, you know, you've got Nick Bolton, the linebacker, Terrence Marshall, a wide receiver, Pete Werner, a linebacker, Carlos Basham, defensive end. You've got then Josh Myers, and obviously the big one I think everybody looks at is Creed Humphrey, you know.
Yeah.
But then you've also got, you know, Ben Cleveland, who's a guard, who's half decent-ish. You've got Robert Haynes, who's currently the starting tackle for the Bucs. And then the big one is Quinn Miner as of the Broncos. You know, these are all players that we could have got afterwards. You know, not, you know, a good portion of them are on the O-line. And you have to question the front offices. Is there something wrong in the scouting department that maybe they just don't rate these guys? Or is it a case of, well, you know what, we'll worry about the O-line later. As long as we've got some skilled players, we'll make it work somehow.
That's definitely how it feels for me as well. It feels as if, like, the offensive line is a lower priority over positions like wide receiver or running back, who we seem to, in the last few years, recruit heavily from.
Yeah, it does. It does feel that way. And I know, I understand, you know, maybe they're looking at it again. We'll get cheaper there, and then we can get better players. You know, we have to go cheap to be able to afford Matt Stafford, Aaron Donald, Cooper Kupp, Jalen Ramsey. But that's not. Yeah, we were successful last year, but in history, that's not how you build a successful team. I think we've had a little bit of luck in that department. It is you start off with your trenches, and then you build back from there. I think, like you said earlier, it is showing now that we are seriously struggling just to keep Stafford upright and maybe give him half that chance to get the ball out and make plays that we need.
So in terms of like who he could get the ball out to, starting with, again, like talking about again, our running game, how do we fix it? One of the questions that we did get in was from, let me see, just sort of scrolling down here, because we've got that many questions. Matthew Breen, he asks us, do you think Henderson should be in before Akers is starter, and do we need to trade or draft a new running back? Now, we have said we don't really have the draft capital there. We've talked about this a couple of times already, but the frustrating for me thing is that a lot of these questions for regular listeners are going to sound like repeat questions, but it highlights there are many issues throughout, specifically, I would say, our offense that really need to be addressed, that if we don't address them, the team is going to capitulate. So what do you think, Andy, in terms of the running back position? First of all, should Henderson be RB1 ahead of Akers? And do you think we need to, again, look at a replacement?
It's a difficult one. Personally, I'd go with whoever is the hot hand of the game. You know, give them both maybe five snaps, you know, three, four, five snaps at the beginning of the game. Whichever one seems to be working, that's it for that game, I think. But again, it comes back to the different styles of players. Akers is more of a speed, get outside, you know, and use his pace to get around. He's more of an outside zone sort of guy, whereas Henderson is more between the tackles. The problem is, I think, you know, as much as people are criticising Akers, and, you know, I do have some criticisms of him myself that, you know, he does seem to, like I said last week, he seems to, instead of looking up, he just puts his head down and goes for whatever it is. You know, again, it falls back to, if the O-line's not giving him those lanes because they can't clear it out, it's impossible. We could put Derrick Henry or, you know, Alvin Kamara back there. If they're not getting the lanes cleared for them to be able to get to the second level to use that speed, they're not going to be successful. And this is, I think, like I said, the big issue is, as much as we can all look at the running backs and say, you know, yeah, okay, Akers is at fault, we do again have to put that back to the O-line of, well, you know, it's their job to get that push, to clear those gaps out. You know, you look at the difference between what the 49ers did for their long touchdown run and our running game. That they were reasonably successful, but not as successful apart from that one big play. But that was simply down to their O-line tricking our defenders to look for the outside zone run, and then he went straight through the middle. You know, they sort of got us to bite a little bit, but they also managed to get that push and clear that lane for him to go through. And let, you know, it was just lucky, unfortunately, that, you know, Wagner and that bit on he's going off to the right, and then basically that he came and left instead. You know, but if we're not getting that push from the O-line, like I said, we could have the best guys in there. You're just going to bang your head off a brick wall all game. And, you know, yeah, some of it does go on Akers that he needs to maybe step up his game, look more, maybe slow down a little bit as well. But I think sometimes the problem is he's so quick out the gun that he's not maybe given guys time to maybe clear the block. He's already up there. And that's, I think, why another reason why he keeps hitting his own guys is that he's so quick to get up there. And maybe he just needs to step back a little bit, maybe let it develop for half a second, and then boost off. And maybe that may be a way to maybe get him going.
Yeah. I mean, just going back to your saying about, like, the offensive line again, it's crippling our offense. It's, you know, I think it's causing problems elsewhere. In terms of the running game, like you're saying about, like, Akers not getting their head up, or if the lane's not there, they can't run it. You said about like Derrick Henry or like Alvin Kamara. They would find the same problems. I think the problem is, though, they're the type of running backs that if the lane's not there, they'll find the lane. They'll adjust. Akers, like you said, his head's down. He doesn't make that adjustment. Henderson is more of your kind of, again, head down. He'll get grinding through. And if Malcolm Brown was it, you know, he was elevated from practice squad, but didn't get a single carry through the game. We've not got, I guess what we need is, we need a running back with burst, with a better ability to lead than the guys we've got. And I'm not trying to run down the likes of Henderson, and I'm doing my best to give Akers as much a chance as he deserves, because he did have a drive against the Cardinals where it was like maybe things are going to start clicking for him, and he had the fumble. And like I defended his actions with the fumble, like on the goal line last week, because he's trying to reach for the score. And a lot of running backs would do the same.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, you said that as well. It's, when you look at the stats for them, like 7 carries for 27 yards for Henderson, 8 carries for 13 yards for Akers. It's not great reading. It's not great to see. The problem is when our running backs come up against a good front line, there's no point in having running backs line up at all. And that's where, for me, it does raise the question of, well, do we need to be looking at the kind of running back that can power through those lines or go around the lines, has the speeds and whatnot? And I guess drafting guys like Akers, or I know he's injured, that Kyren Williams, he was another, his kind of draft report was kind of centered around that he has a bit of a speed about him. It's one of those ones, we don't, like you said, we don't have the draft capital, so we can't exactly go out here and say, well, let's let's throw every first round pick for the next 10 years at Derrick Henry to bring him in to give us a powerhouse at running back and absolutely destroy defences on the ground. Just as pains me to say it, as I've always been a fan of the running game. When I first became a Rams fan, Marshall Faulk was my favourite player. I just loved his game. I loved the fact that he was not a one-dimensional running back. He wasn't about just the run. He was about pass protection. He was about blocking. He was about receiving. He was an all-rounder. He had it all. He was amazing. And we had Jackson after him. I think knowing that we've had such great running backs before, we have been able to go out in the past and find, and or in the case of Faulk, trade for these players. And sadly, I think it's going to be a long time before we're going to be in a position to recruit a running back that's good enough to fit the kind of offense that we want to play. And as a result, we then have to put pressure onto our wide receivers. Tell me if you think I'm unfair in what I've just said, but that's just my general feeling, thinking about what I've seen in the past. We had Gurley, who looked amazing. Somebody tweeted, I can't remember the account, the other day, asking like if there was one athlete that you could take away all their injuries for to see them keep playing at their best, who would it be? And I said Todd Gurley, because imagine Todd Gurley in this offense.
Yeah, too right. I think I do remember seeing about that. Actually, I think I remember seeing you put something about that. But yeah, I agree. Somebody like a Todd Gurley, but like I say, as much as, you know, if your offensive line's not going to give you the help, then, you know, it's going to be a lot more of a struggle. You know, and I think, again, we saw, you know, as much as Gurley had his injury issues, he started to also suffer, you know, when we started to lose our good O-line and we started to just put scrubs, not being horrible, but scrubs in there and, you know, players who maybe shouldn't really be NFL starters, the backup caliber at best, you know. So it's a difficult one. Like I say, I personally, like going back to the question, play with the guy with a hot hand, give them both a couple of drives each, let, you know, a few carries each. Let's see which one's getting us the most. And then just roam with that hand. We can, other teams do it, you know, hot hand, you know, whoever it is. And I think that's the way we're going to have to do it at the moment. It's just look at it and say, right, okay, this week Henderson seems to be getting, you know, grinding out the yards, right? Well, Henderson will be our main back.
Yeah.
But you do also wonder, is it also McVay's worried that if those two go down, we basically have nothing behind him? So he's going to maybe keep wanting to rotate them to try and keep them as healthy as he can. Because let's be honest, at the moment, beyond with Kyren Williams going down for the season, our next running back, apart from obviously, you know, Marky Brown's back, is, you know, we're then relying on the likes of Jake Funk, which we really don't want to see out there at all, if we can help it.
No, and it's one as well, like you're saying about the rotation of the running backs, it's something McVay has favoured back to when Gurley was even on the roster, when you had, you know, Malcolm Brown, and you're on a super run, we brought in Anderson as well. So he does favour that rotation. But moving on to the other part of the offense, what I kind of talk about is the wide receivers. Cooper Kupp again this week, was 122 yards. Yep, 122 yards. He was off 14 carries, so just brings that somewhere. No touchdowns though. Kupp making the big plays again as usual. Tyler Higbee seems to have cemented himself as our number two wide receiver, but the main questions are coming elsewhere for me in terms of the wide receivers. Now, Ben Skowronek, for the first time, is totally exempt from wide receiver criticism because we've seen him add value elsewhere. So even though Skowronek had two catches for 33 yards, Higbee had 10 for 73. It was 14 for 122 for Kupp. The main questions are coming back to, we've mentioned them previously, to Atwell, but the other one is, again, Allen Robinson. We had a couple of questions relating to both of them. Like, so we already spoke about, one question came from Michael Woods was, should we have drafted the centre in terms of Tutu? Another part of his question was, is Robinson fit to carry Bobby Tree's boots? What I'll do is I'll just rattle through these questions because we'll just talk collectively about Alan Robinson. Mitch asked us, how long till we all agree that Robinson was a swing and a miss? And also, how do we get out of his three-year contract? Ellie Rams Fan Zone asks us, Alan Robinson, WTF? And Di Harris asks us, how long till we admit that Tutu was a bust and start McCutcheon? So, start with Alan Robinson, Andy. Do you think there has been a waste on our side bringing him to LA? Or do you think it's a case that this guy is just struggling to somehow get into games?
I still think it's too early to say he's a waste. You know, the guy has historically played well. You know, it's difficult, you know, to know what's going on. Maybe, like we've said previously, maybe because of the pressure Stafford's under, he's not been able to get to his second, third read. Maybe he's just comfortable. You know, he's getting his head battered in. He's just like, right, you know what? I'm used to Cup. I'm used to Higby. I'm just going to put it to them because I trust them. And Robinson's just becoming an afterthought. You know, I don't know. I think a few of us, when Beckham first came, we were kind of, I think he had a slowish start to his, and we were, you know, there was questions being raised then of, you know, why is he here? You know, is he, you know, we've still got to give the guy, I think, a chance, but he is starting to, you know, I can understand people being worried because, you know, it's been 4 weeks now. We've not, apart from one game, we've not really got him going. And he's the sort of player that we were expecting that, okay, we all understood Cup's going to get double teamed.
Yeah,
he's slowly going to turn into, I think, Aaron Donald. They're not going to just double team him now. They're going to start triple teaming him, you know, to try and shut him down. Yeah, and we were expecting Robinson. Okay, well, you could pick up that slack, much like Beckham did, you know, throughout the playoffs and, you know, up until when he was injured in the Super Bowl. It was a case of, right, okay, we'll give you the ball. You know, we can play off you. And at the moment, we don't know. He's just another one. He just looks like he's half a yard off pace, whether he's not fully fit, whether he's not fully up to game speed. I don't know. It just seems to be like, but you know, there was a few runs last night that, you know, you could see, you know, they were highlighting them, you know, and he was getting open. It wasn't as if, you know, he's being completely, you know, locked down, covered up, and he is getting himself open. It's almost as if sometimes Stafford's just not looking at him. Stafford's just like, yeah, all right, or you know, right, well, you go do this, you go distract him, and I'm just going to ram it into Cup's throat, down Cup's throat anyway.
On that, like, one thing that I remember us talking about last season was that Stafford seemed to be so zeroed in on Cup that he could never see Robert Woods wide open. And Woods never got into games and never got half of the receptions that he should have. Perhaps it's the same with Robinson. Perhaps, like you said, Stafford's just not seeing him. He sees Cup, he sees Higby, but he's not looking for Robinson. And that's where maybe the issue lies. Maybe it's what I was saying about there's no synchronization, not just with Cup, but with all of these potential receivers from Stafford, that he's missing players like Robinson getting wide open when he does.
Yeah, no, you know, it seems to be, at the moment for Stafford, it seems to be Cup, Higby, Skowronek, and then maybe Robinson as almost like an afterthought of, well, I can't go to them three. All right, I'll just go and lob it up to, to Robinson, and we'll just see what happens, you know. And, you know, so maybe that the issue is that they've not gelled, or they're not, something just hasn't quite clicked with them, or, you know, but you would expect him to be, right, okay, Cup's one. Obviously, we all know Cup's going to be number one. Robinson should be two. Maybe Higby is three, and, you know, Skowronek is four, or whoever else is in. You know, so I think we are going to have to, you know, get something going for him, whether that's okay. Well, you know what? Robinson becomes number one for a few game plans, and maybe see if maybe we can get him going. And, you know, wide receiver as well is one of those positions. It's confidence. If wide receivers have not got the seems to lack confidence, that's where you get the drops. They're not getting, you know. So I think we need to, you know, a good couple of games for him. I think the noise will die down, and then, you know, maybe they can get that gel going and get that moving. But as for Atwell, I had high hopes for that guy coming into this season. You know, we all saw the hype of training camp and some of the plays he was making, you know. But then you start looking at that and thinking, given how at times those players for our secondary are getting torched anyway, was it just a case of the secondary players he was going up against was, you know, second, third string, and, you know, it made him look half competent? Because when he's been out there on the limited things he's got,
yep,
he just hasn't. You know, okay, on one of them, I think Staff just well and truly, you know, Staff had overflew him by a mile. I think he must have thought he could run like, you know, Usain Bolt speeds the way he overthrew him. But, you know, he's had a couple that have hit his chest, they've bounced out, and you're sort of like, these are catches you should be making, you know. So, yeah, I think it's time, if anything, we start looking at Atwell and going, well, you know what, you're just taking up a roster spot here. Bump him back down to the practice squad maybe and let somebody else come up, or you could maybe give us a little bit more.
Well, I think when you consider that Brandon Powell, who was previously labelled as a, you know, a kick returner, he's got 5 catches for 43 yards. Atwell doesn't have a single catch so far in 4 games. He's only been targeted maybe a handful of times. He wasn't targeted once this week.
He didn't even dress this week.
Did he not dress? Sorry, my mistake.
No. He was inactive this week. He was a healthy scratch.
Inactive report. Sorry, yeah, that's my mistake.
That's what I say. He was a healthy scratch. It was as if he was injured, because I said, oh, maybe he's got a knock or something. And you're like, no, he's a healthy scratch.
Just so one of the ones that make the match day.
Yeah, obviously he must be back in McVay's dughouse again.
Well, it's one of those ones, like you're saying, like a few of the targets were like, should have been relatively straightforward catches for him. I don't think the guy is good enough, to be honest with you. You know, if he's at the point now where he's not, you know, he's not dressing for the game, then he's definitely falling down, you know, the rankings. And I think this is where, you know, there was the big hype around him in the preseason. I think this is where really maybe McVay needs to start looking at giving McCutcheon a try, see what he can do against, you know, like the actual teams, you know, not like second, third strings or whatever that were playing in the pre-season. Put him out there. The guy's a lot, obviously, doesn't take much, I guess, to be a lot taller than Tutu Atwell, but he's, you know, he's a lot taller. Give the guy, he's got a bit of speed about him. Let's see what he can do. Give him that chance. But it's just one of the questions that I said we did get asked, was it a mistake to get rid of Robert Woods?
At the moment, it appears to be, you know, as much as I loved Bobby Trees, when he left, I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe it was just time. He's getting older. He's had a few, he's had quite a few injuries, you know. You know, he didn't do nothing much when he was in the team, you know, as we've just alluded to, it seemed to be cup or nothing. You know, even when he was getting open, he wasn't getting that, you know. So I think at the moment, but again, I think it would just be a case of you put Woods in Robinson's shoes, and we'd probably be having the same discussion. Is Bobby Woods washed up, finished? Is he, you know, yeah. I think it's just how the game is playing at the moment that he, whoever seems to be our number two wide receiver for some strange reason, just seems to get crossed off the playlist. And it's just like, yeah, he's just there, just do your own thing. Yeah. You know, he doesn't seem to be getting that look. But I agree with McCutcheon. I think he needs to be given a chance. I think, you know, get the guy out there, give him a chance, you know.
Well, he earned that roster spot, so use him.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like you said, Atwell is, quite frankly, wasting a roster spot that we could, to be quite frank, cut his ass and try and bring in another lineman to fill that roster spot. So,
yeah,
next game, against
or
Cowboys.
I suppose is one thing to go back quickly on Atwell,
mm-hmm,
is I was expecting McVay, okay, to maybe be a little bit creative how he uses them. Maybe, you know, don't line him up as a, because obviously it's size and height, don't line him up as a traditional wide receiver. Maybe, okay, you'll use you on bubble screens, jet sweeps, and use that speed to maybe, you know, okay, do what Deebo Samuel does, make people miss you, you know, because you're that quick, you're that slippery. You know, he's so small, he could hide behind, you know, I think he's, you know, if Kyler Murray gets lost behind his own line, then Tutu Atwell will probably disappear. You know, they'll never see him coming, you know, because of how small he is. You know, you'd think there'd be something they do to get him moving, you know, to get the ball, you know, get the ball in his hand and let him use that so-called, you know, that speed that, you know, McVay drafted him for. You know, when he drafted him, it was, I loved his speed. I loved his, you know, he's not using it. You know, you think, well,
we've not seen it.
Get creative. Get, you know, this is again back to adjustments. You know, if needs be, if you really desperately want to use that speed of his, get creative with him. Use them on, like I say, jet sweeps, bubble screens. Line them up. You know, you've took Skronik and lined them up in the backfield. Do the same with that. Well, let's see maybe if that speed, that thing, you know, make teams go, hang on, what's he doing back there? Well, hang on a minute, what's going on? You know, confuse teams a little bit, you know, and maybe just innovate and do something with him before, you know, because as people have said now, I'm starting to agree, he's a bust at this point for the team until he proves otherwise.
Yep, and just moving on, last little analysis of the game is the defense. Again, a lot of people complaining about is being described as playing too soft, playing too deep. How do you feel like the defense played in the game? For me, considering that they didn't get a single sack or a turnover, giving up that touchdown play to Samuel of all people, they gave up another big one, and giving up a 50-yard touchdown run as well, considering that where we are going into the game ranked as one of the best run defenses, I don't think it was great whatsoever. But that touchdown pass to Samuel, like, just it brought back PTSD of, you know, watching Troy Reader being dragged 10 yards. How did you think the defense was?
I think when you look at it on paper, obviously people are going to look at those two plays and be like, yeah, you know, you got to. But other than that, I don't think we played as bad. We kind of limited them for what, you know, potentially they could have been. But I do agree, we all knew that with Garoppolo in, it was going to be dink and dunk play. And playing, you know, giving the guys 10 yards, 15 yards to play with before they've even started was just, again, ridiculous. We needed to get a little bit up close. And to be honest, we needed to blitz Garoppolo more, because we all know if you blitz Garoppolo, you get him hit, you get him riled, you know, banged about a little bit, then his game plan falls apart. We did that in the championship game. We were like, right, okay, stuff it. We'll blast them and see what happens, you know. And we were sending five, sometimes six man blitzers, you know, get them rattled, get them going, you know. And, you know, that's, I think, what we should have done last night was, okay, if you genuinely want to play your DBs off that soft, fine, you know. Go. If you're also scared of getting beat, which I do think Morris has a complexion about the deep ball, I think he hates being beaten over the top by a deep ball. I think that's why he plays so soft, is he does not. He seems to have this complex. Maybe it's, you know, a lot of our DBs, again, you know, outside of Ramsey, they're all, you know, lower round picks. They're not the quickest, you know, they're not, you know, your 4.3 speed guys, that they fell for a reason. And normally it is because of, you know, a lack of straight line speed. So, you know, maybe that factors into it and he just doesn't want to get burnt for those, you know, 70-yard, you know, touchdowns. He's sort of like, you know, play that thing. But you would expect blitz, hit them, get going. Like we said, we've all talked about our O-line last night and how banged up and how thick, but theirs is exactly the same. And you're thinking, like I say, it's where you want, you know, we're paying Leonard Floyd damn good money to, okay, you're alongside Aaron Donald, you know, Donald's going to eat double teams, triple teams. You are one-on-one with these players. You should be getting around these guys, especially when, you know, they're playing their backups as well. You should be beating that guy nearly every time. And he just looked like he just wasn't in the game. Like he was, again, another one that was just going through the motions of, I'll hit up against you. I'll pretend I'll wave my arms around a little bit and that's me done for the night. You know, we didn't have that, but, you know, I think if you look at the defensive statistics, you'd look at it and go, actually, it wasn't a bad game. It was a few stupid things that just made the game look worse than it actually was. And the fact that, you know, like I said, we didn't get a sack all game, which is like, I can't remember the last time we didn't even get any sacks in a game. I genuinely can't remember.
Yep. I was wanting to see to end on trying to end on any kind of positives from this game, but just seen a tweet that's literally just came through from Jordan Rodrigue. It's not really good news. Centre Coleman Shelton has had a high ankle sprain, will now be out 4 to 6 weeks. Jordan Fuller has re-aggravated his hamstring and out for a couple of weeks, as per McVeigh. So maybe going bad for us. Maybe Matt Skura will be getting elevated now as starting centre next week. But if it's all right with you, Andy, maybe we need to just put last night and this week's game in the past and just move on. What do you say?
Yeah, just one quick thing. How Taylor Rapp is getting games above other against Burgess, I will never know, because that guy cannot tackle to save his life. Well, we've had that discussion a number of times.
I remember last year we did actually ask about the criticism coming in from Taylor Rapp. He had a bit of an up and down season last year. One of the questions we did actually get from Matt on the score W was, is Taylor Rapp the new scapegoat of the defence, or is his continued criticism justified?
Yeah, I feel it's justified. You know, he could have blown up that Samuel play last night if he'd have just tackled him properly and brought him down. Instead, he just flopped around his legs, let him go, and that was it. You know, obviously, there's other players, but if he'd have just done his job at the start, that play would have broke down. That would have been the end of it. You know, it's not the first time he's had these issues if he misses tackles or, you know, I think there was one last night that I was sort of picked up. He basically, obviously, must have been playing zone coverage. And he went out onto the flat, and there's nobody come to the flat. Everybody went the opposite side. And he's just standing there just like, well, no one's coming. I'm not even going to bother moving. You know, and I've seen that with him time and time again. Again, he doesn't seem to. And I think we had high hopes for him. He had a decent rookie season for safety. And I think we all had high hopes for the guy. And he just doesn't seem to have put it together in year two. And I think next year, you know, it's a contract year, and at the moment to be honest, if he can't get his tackling down, I would like to see us draft a replacement for him or bring somebody else in as a replacement and just cut him, because I don't think he's good enough.
Nope. And on that, let's move on. So just looking elsewhere around the league, so we saw Arizona beat the Panthers. The Lions were unlucky once again to lose 48-45 to the Seahawks. So that kind of wraps up how the rest of the division went. In terms of the NFC West, everyone's 2-2. Basically, 49ers are top. We're second, Seahawks are third, and the Cardinals are bringing up the rear. Elsewhere in the league, the Zebras, it's the Bengals, because they were wearing their, you know, colourless uniforms, beat the Dolphins. The double doink heard around the world in London. How amazing was that for the Saints to see them lose with that?
That was perfect. That really was perfect. It's just a perfect end to the game.
It was. Did you watch the London game? I missed it because I was away for the weekend with the family.
Yeah. I watched the London game on the telly. I was just like, you know what? Nothing else to do on a Saturday afternoon. It was a good excuse of, you know, oh, should we go and do this afternoon from the missus? I was like, no, nah, there's football to watch. Sorry.
And yeah, another thing I cannot afford to tackle from this week's results was, how the hell did the Colts manage to beat the Chiefs after losing to the Titans?
I really don't know. It was unbelievable.
Was there any of our games apart from that you kind of felt were standout worth mentioning?
I think, you know, obviously everyone's going to look at, yeah, Buffalo, Baltimore. That was a pretty good game themselves. Yeah. Obviously, you know, I think everybody's looking at Miami because of the strain, you know, the Tua situation at the moment.
The concussions, Jesus Christ, I I can't believe I forgot to mention that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but right, the question is, should he have played?
It's a difficult one, to be honest, because, you know, I've argued both sides, you know, that at the end of the day, the doctor has cleared him. Obviously, new thing has come out that the doctor's been fired for not following protocol. But at the end of the day, if the neurological specialist says he's fine, that's all teams are going to go off is, well, yeah, okay, he's fine. You know, I'm sure if we were in the same position and Stafford was in a similar situation and a neurosurgeon said, yeah, he's fine to go, McVay's not going to turn around and say, well, no, he's not playing. I don't believe he's fit enough anyway. We're going to chuck him back out there. It's the nature of the business.
Yeah, if I'm right, the guy who gave him the all clear wasn't exactly like, he's not employed by the Dolphins, if I'm right in saying that. It's someone who's independent that's appointed by the league to do these assessments.
Yeah, they're trained neuro consultants who are employed by the NFLPA. So it's actually employed by the union.
Right.
So to make it completely independent, and basically they have final say. If they say a player is suffering concussion, that's the end of it. The teams can't argue with it. Their medical staff do get involved in the tests and everything else, but he has final say over whether that player is capable of going back in or not.
Yeah, so it's not like, you know, an any given Sunday scenario where, like, the doctor's basically just injecting the players, you know, get them through the games, regardless of what state they're in. This is like total independent guys who are making these calls and putting guys like Tua at, you know, severe risk.
Yeah, you know, it was a severe risk. You know, I think, you know, as we all say, hindsight's 20/20. You know, in hindsight, he shouldn't have gone back in. With the information they were given at that time in the first game anyway by that guy, you know, he said he's fine. Teams are going to go, and right, okay, fine. He's good to go. You know, so, you know, I think there has to be, you know, luckily the league's now looking at this and saying, well, actually, okay, but he's still staggering around. That should be a no-go. So they're going to be changing them. I think from this week, the rules have been changing. If there's any sign whatsoever of instability, it's just a flat out right. They're not carrying on. They're finished for the game.
Yep. And you know, I understand in the States, the discussion around concussion protocols is quite a hot topic in general. There's a guy, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, he's called Chris Nowinski. He's one of the kind of leading, you know, advocates for stricter controls and protocols around concussion in sports. To give you a wee, if you don't know him, a bit of background, Chris Nowinski used to be a wrestler. He was in the WWE. He was one of the guys that came kind of through developmental kind of like leagues. Spent some time in WWE, had a lot of problems with concussions, came basically had to retire because of concussions, and immediately went and started kind of campaigning for, you know, concussion, like basically being an advocate for it being more looked at stringently and a lot more care being put towards athletes from all sports to care for them and to prevent them from doing things that basically what happened to Tua last week. And he's been really vocal this week criticizing the NFL as a whole for even allowing a guy who they have said, no, he's got concussion. They confirmed that, but like even with an independent guy that's employed by the union going out and saying, no, he's fine. I think the point you try to make was, you know, like, just to compare it to, you know, with the COVID protocols with concussions, if you are diagnosed and yes, you've had a concussion, you are out for X amount of time to ensure. Now, I understand with some concussions that you can be concussed, but you're absolutely fine. But if that player takes another head knock again, it could cause brain damage, from what I understand. And I think it's something that, you know, hopefully that's the league are looking at, you know, being more strict of it and perhaps looking at things where when a player's assessed, if, you know, concussion's confirmed, then they need to spend time in the sidelines, you know, to protect them. We've seen it in the off-season during training camps, the, you know, the padded helmets that guys were wearing. And it's the point in those helmets is for stuff like concussion is to prevent neck and head injuries during practices, so that it prevents the limitation on a player's career because of all that impact. Because if you think, guy on the line, your offense may have between, say, 40 and 50 plays. That's 40 and 50 times where your helmet is going to collide, perhaps, with the guy opposite you. And your head is going to be bent in a position that could hurt you. That happening for 17 weeks of a season, more if you make the playoffs, plus all your practices, it really adds up, and it does really create a big risk. And I think, sadly, it's taken for something like what happened with Tua to make people actually finally sit up and go, more needs to be done about this, because it was just that when he collapsed, it was like, Jesus Christ, man, that like the worst kind of scenario start to go through your head, don't they?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. You know, the first one, you know, I saw the first, you know, the first week, you know, the one he had on that week, and you were kind of like, you know, even I was looking, going, ooh, you know, he sort of got up, stumbled, fell back, that, and you thought, I was like, yeah, he ain't right. And then he goes off, and you thought, that's him done for a game. And then it's like, oh, he's back again. He's fine. And you sort of question, but you go, okay, you know what? This guy is a trained neurosurgeon. He's had physical hands on with him. He must know what he's doing. Now, it turns out maybe he didn't, because he's been sacked. But, you know, that second one, you know, you did think to yourself, oh, my, you know, something really nasty is going on. And yeah, you say, you know, you do start thinking to yourself the worst case scenario, you know. And, it, you know, unfortunately, it does take incidents like this for the league to change its rules. And, you know, as much as you hate seeing it happen to players, if at the end of the day it comes out that, you know, better protocols and better protection for these guys is, you know, is only a good thing for them, you know, to come away with that, you know, they have got better protection for them and better rules that, you know, okay, well, whether it's a head injury or he's hurt, if you have any sort of instability, you're off the field for the game. You know, that rule coming in is good, because, you know, as much as people say, oh, it was only a back injury. Well, yeah, okay, it's only a back injury. But do you realise the instability from his back injury can lead to further problems as well? You know, so the fact that the league has, you know, they've looked at it, gone, yeah, okay. Initially, they were like, no, the guy's followed protocol, and now it's found out he hasn't, or whatever's going on in the backgrounds, if not completely said. But they've basically said, no, this guy's no longer employed by us because he didn't do his job properly, you know. It's good that they've held that accountability to, you know, go out there and say, and then say, right, these are the changes that we're making to make players safer. Because, you know, it's good for the league that, you know, the safer the players are, the better it is for us as fans, because we don't want to see players week in, week out, you know, down and out.
No, I mean, regardless of who you play for.
Which team
it
is, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sitting here going, oh, I hate the 49ers, but if something like that was happening to, like, say it was Jimmy G, say it was Deebo Samuel, and I don't like either one of those guys. If it happened to him, I wouldn't want to see it happen, you know.
No.
It's a sport, it's the rivalry is with the sport and the team, it's not with the individuals and the people. So, you know, absolutely, you don't want to see that happen, no matter who it is. And fingers crossed that the reaction that we've seen from the league in the last couple of days to go, no, this guy's gone. No, he's not following protocol properly. And them to immediately think we need to change, you know, like you said, if there's any kind of like head injury like that, it says, no, you're out. Hopefully, in the coming weeks, the league builds on that. But at least the reaction from them has been positive in that respect, that they have acknowledged, no, we're not doing enough here. We need to do more, and we're going to try. But
yeah,
that's...
The only other thing of note I'd probably say is, who'd have thought at the beginning of the season the only unbeaten team would be the Philadelphia Eagles?
But it's crazy, actually, when I was looking at the divisional standings, when I came to NFC East, I was like, Christ, 2 years ago, man, every one of them were god-awful. And you know, the Eagles are the only undefeated team. I mean, the Cowboys and the Giants are both sitting 3-1 as well. And, you know, the Commanders are 1-3, but, I mean, you don't really expect them to be doing any better than that.
If you've got Carson Wentz as a QB, you can expect to have a losing season.
Exactly. But the NFC East has totally flipped on its head from going from being the worst in the league, and the worst in the NFC especially, to the best at present, followed by the North and then us. But yeah, the Eagles are not a dark horse team, I'd say. Right now they are, they're 4-0, I guess, so they are leading the pack. And
I
just
think it was one of them with them. It was whatever Jalen, I think everybody was like, it all depended on Jalen Hurts. If you could put it together, they had a good team. If Jalen Hurts was pants, then they'd fall apart. And so far, he's played well. You know, so credit to him.
Well, that's it. Well, the Eagles in particular, they've got the Cardinals this week. I'm just looking at the matchups for week five. So on Thursday night, your prime time game is the Colts versus the Broncos, which I'm sure we'll all be staying up late to watch. Then 2:30 in Sunday afternoon, we've got the second London game. It's the Giants at Packers, which should be a pretty decent game. Giants at 3-1, so the Packers. So that should be a pretty good game to watch.
Packers just struggled, don't they? They struggled this week.
They did, and the
overtime
Giants
field goal.
The Giants are you know, that famous picture, like it's got the likes of Beckham and all that, you know, on the boat, and like how awful they've been since that picture was taken. You know, the Giants are starting to really turn it around now. Just looking at some of the other early window games, you've got Steelers, Bills, Chargers, Browns, Texans, Jags, Bears, Vikings, Lions, Patriots. Hopefully the Lions luck, you know, go in their favour this week, considering it's the Patriots they're playing. The Seahawks will beat the Saints, Dolphins, Jets, Falcons, Bucks, and the Titans and Commanders. Then the late window ones, I said, the Eagles, Cardinals, Niners, Panthers, and then moving on to us against the Cowboys, who are currently sitting 3-1 in the NFC East. How do you feel this one's going to go, Andy?
Beginning of the season, I was confident that we'd smashed them. Now I'm actually worried, if I'm being honest. For one simple reason, if we put that offensive line out we did against the Niners, I think Micah Parsons is going to be the first player in NFL history to put up double-digit sacks in one game. I think he will wreck us.
Yeah, especially if we're just saying, like, 5 minutes ago, whatever, that Coleman Shelton is now going to be out for the next 4 to 6 weeks. So, I mean, the offensive line has went from, you know, worse to even worse, if you can even say that now. So, I am deeply concerned about how this is going to go for us. On their offense, also, Cooper Rush is kind of getting a bit of traction as well. Dak has apparently been ruled out already of the game this week.
I saw something about that earlier. So, but like I said, I don't think it matters because they're playing better when they don't have him in the squad.
Yes, I actually would have said that. I was hoping he would come back. I was hoping come on tonight they'd be like, yes, Dak's coming back. We've got a chance because he's come back off of a thumb injury. We saw, you know, like Goff when he had his injury, like the kind of limitations he had, coming back quicker than he should have. But that would be Cooper Rush, and like you said, they are basically a sack machine in Dallas at the moment. So our best bet is to either get the ball out quick, or this is where perhaps McVay is going to have to dust off, you know, a bit more play action, a bit more kind of rollout kind of tactics to try and catch them off guard, I guess. But I suppose it's one of those ones, like, I mean, they might have Diggs in the secondary, but he's likely to give up a good 70 or 80 yards, is he not?
Yeah, I don't think he's as good a player. I think his interceptions last year, you know, he reminds me, again, I hate to say this, of Marcus Peters. He makes those big splashy plays of the interceptions and looks good, but when you actually deep dive into the statistics, he gives up a lot as well with it. You know, and I think he's that similar mold of player. He'll get you at, you know, double-digit picks, but he'll also give you up, you know, touchdowns every game and get burnt alive by players. And hopefully, if they stick Cooper Kupp on him, and we can keep Stafford upright, I could see Kupp feasting on him this week and just making him look like a complete fool, hopefully.
Fingers crossed. I mean, for me, like I said, they're the... We're really worried about the offensive line in general. Like, I think we can both agree that we are absolutely terrified of the offensive line and watching them now. We need Kupp to feast, but we need Stafford to be quick on his feet. We need him out of the pocket. Would you say that he needs to be prepared to scramble. I mean, he's had a few rushing attempts, I guess, so far this season. He's actually been a couple of times rated above a running backs, I believe.
Yeah.
But it's for me, like, it sounds like, tell me if you would agree, that we have to be more mobile as an offense. Let's play as if there's not a line there. Just ignore, just get away from the offensive line as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that will work. Also, I keep banging on about, if we can get the run game going, it's going to open so much more up for us. You know, if you get the run game going, it makes that play action easier. You know, if you can get them genuinely afraid that maybe Henderson or Akers can break off some big plays, you know, that's going to open up the playbook so much more for Stafford, because that's going to be more natural. Because, you know, otherwise teams are going to be like, well, they can't run it. All right, they're going to be play action in it, and they're just going to come straight after them anyway. So, you know, we need to get that run game going. We need to sort of try and pound it. Maybe we need to come out with some big personnel packages, you know, six linemen and a couple of tight ends in, you know, and just smash this ball a little bit, you know, stuff with, you know, 11 personnel, which McVay tends to like to run with, you know.
Yeah.
Bin it, two tight ends in, six linemen, one wide receiver, you know, Benny Sko back there, you know, with one of the running backs, and just pound this ball up the throat to start off with, and let's just see if maybe we can, because it's the only way you can slow Parsons down. Otherwise, he's, like I said, he's just going to eat us all alive all night.
Perhaps.
And then, you know, you've got Parsons, but then, you know, Lawrence on the other side isn't a bad player. He, you know, he's still a pretty decent player, you know, so we need to see adjustments from McVay to turn around and get this game moving, get some sort of game plan to neutralise.
Perhaps Benny Sko could be a key player for us. Just when you said about him, you know, kind of like filling in that fullback role and maybe taking Parsons out of the game, because, you know, I think if you just think back to that block on JJ Watt, Skoronek is capable of that. He's capable of stopping. It's crazy to think how a receiver's capable of stopping, you know, like a pass rusher like that. But maybe he could be a key player for us this week. Perhaps we need to make sure he lines up a lot in that fullback role to allow us to get a run game going. Would you think?
It could possibly work. The only thing I will say, and you, again, this is, I hate to go back to the Niners game, but there was a few when he was going up against those speedier players, he was just getting beat. He was just, you know, they just went around him like he didn't exist, because he's not used, I think, to that mentality if he's going to rush out. And I think, again, Parsons could very well do the same thing. He could just go, yeah, all right, it's you. I'm just going to spin around you and I'm gone. You know, we need to, I think it will help, but I think, we need to get that game plan going to neutralise him without him even getting near anything, let's say. Get that run game going, get the pass play action going, quick screens, quick bubble screens, anything to sort of mix it up and just get that, you know. So we're not putting that pressure on the O-line. If the O-line's only got to hold up for a second for that ball to come out, I think it's going to help a lot for the whole team, you know. And it isn't going to look pretty, and it isn't going to be, you know, the Hollywood passes that everybody wants and expects out of this team. But like we've said before, sometimes you're just going to have to just go, well, that part of this playbook's getting scrapped. We'll go back to our Jared Goff days, quick throws, and just get those balls out of Stafford's hands for the time being.
Yep. And just another thing on the running game, like, you're saying about, like, off the offensive line's only going to hold up for half a second. Is that long enough to establish a running game? Because it's only up for half a second. For that half second, you know, is the ball in the running back's hand to then be able to see the oncoming rush to make an adjustment? Is it one of those ones that, unfortunately, it's not really going to matter what we do if the offensive line isn't going to be able to hold up?
To be honest, this half a second is for the pass game, because obviously when you're doing the run plays, your line's going forward, it's moving. When it's passing plays, your line has to come backwards to stay with the quarterback. Otherwise, you start getting that downfield nonsense that they seem to come out with a lot this year. So, you know, it's a different some players can be very good run blockers but can't pass play to pro to save a life. Other players can pass protection brilliantly, but they can't run block to save a life. So, you know, I think with having those six pairs linemen in, we can maybe just get that extra punch up front to maybe clear some lanes, which will then give Akers of speed maybe a chance to get through, or, you know, Henderson to just grind those yards out. You know, I think, you know, that part we can get done. You know, I think when it comes to our offensive line, the better run blockers, as much as it doesn't appear to be, they are schematically better run blockers. They're more athletic than they are as pass blockers. So if we can maybe play that six, you know, and maybe use Cup as a, you know, hybrid tight end, Higby all blocking, you know, and just to push the Cowboys up the line to give us that thing, you know, it would give us a chance. And as I say, the passing game, we aren't going to hold up in pass protection, which is where we have to do that quick, you know, get the ball out and then let the likes of Cup work his magic after the catch, you know, where he's going to get you the, you know, it might only be 2 yard throw, but then, you know, Cup's going to give you that magic of, you know, 8 to 10 yards extra of run after catch ability that he has quite clearly, you know, that he quite often puts on display practically every game now.
Yep, it certainly sounds like your opinion is we're going to have to pull a rabbit out of a hat here. When maybe a couple of weeks ago, it would have been a case of, it doesn't matter what the throw is, like, we'll beat them. So,
yeah, you know, beginning of the season, it's one of those ones I had down as we're going to win this. You know, it wasn't even a hesitation in my mind. It was okay, you know, first couple of games, you know, yeah, all right, I thought, yeah, we'll lose, you know. And then, you know, Cowboys was a straight, yep, straight, didn't even have to think about it. It was a tick in the win column. And yep. Now you're like, as I say, now you're sort of going, oh, you know, we didn't play that well even against the Falcons in reality. And, you know, this team's good. We've got, you know, the doubt in people. I think it's a doubt now in people's minds of we cannot hold up like we, you know, like we did last year. We are struggling massively. And the more injuries we're getting, the harder it's getting for us now to, you know, even put a team out.
Yep, and just on the topic of predictions there, you said it was a straight, easy W in the column for you. Looking at last week's predictions of our 27 group we've got that's predicted for this year, 17 of us predicted a 49ers win, putting us at 63% loss rate, which came true. So taking out, I think, 4 people who previously were all seen eyes. So Matt Warren, Dan Flint, Jamie Page, and Aaron and Rob from the LA Rams UK team are currently all still correcting the correct record, 2-2 with the correct wins and losses. Looking ahead to this game, like you said, Andy, you felt like it was an easy W. 26 out of 27 predict a Rams win, with only Chris from the LA Rams UK team saying that we will lose. I think if we were all given the chance to go back and revisit that, we probably would change our opinion. So, Andy, straight question, win or loss? That's a loss. The hesitation.
I'm not just thinking.
I want to say win.
My heart says win, but my mind just says loss. And I'm just, you know what, this week I'm just going to go with my heart and say win, because I believe that between the team, there's going to be a lot of annoyed players in that dressing room this week. Your Ramses, Wagner, Donald, Stafford, Cup, everyone else, they're all going to be wound up and angry and wanting to put that out the window and get back to winning ways. So I'm still just, and I'm hoping that maybe with a few, you know, I think maybe if we saw the Friday injury report, I might say differently, but at the moment, I'll still be confident we might get one or two back, David Edwards, and that might be back for the game.
Yeah. Yep. As for myself, I'm going to not go in my head here. I'm going to go in my heart. I think you're right when you say it. Like, if you think back to the Bills game, immediately the players were all coming out and saying, you know, we know what we've done wrong here. We know what we've got to do to get put right. And, you know, they went out, the Falcons, you know, we nearly falconed it in the end, I guess, but we still won. And that's what the kind of reaction I'm looking for here, coming off a loss to your biggest rivals. My hope is that the likes of your Donalds, your Ramses, your Cups, even Stafford will come out and go, nah, got to put this right, and they're going to come out, not maybe not all guns blazing, but they're going to come out and they're going to grind it out. So just like yourself, I am predicting a Rams win. So just before we wrap up, Andy, anything else you want to add?
Nope, can't think of anything myself.
Great. Well, that about does it for episode 79 of the LA Rams UK podcast. I've been John. Thank you for everyone to join us. Andy, as always, mate, absolute pleasure to talk about Rams with you.
Yep, same here, mate. Absolute pleasure. And let's hope we don't have anything to worry about next week and we have a much better result and we can all be back to happy moods.
Well, there was certainly plenty to whine about this week, but fingers crossed, like you said, there's nothing to whine about next week. Thank you to everyone for listening, as always. Thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for being a part of the podcast. Thanks for all your chat, your comments, whatnot on Facebook, Twitter, and Discord. Fingers crossed, guys, when we come back next week, we're all more positive, no negativity. Let's positive mental attitude. Rams are going out and they're going to humble them boys. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Catch you all next week. Go Rams!